You are listening to Baltimoreans,
the home of the all-weather fan.
My name is Sam Dingman.
This is your host, Alan Smith.
Let's get stupid.
Baltimoreans.
Hello, Baltimoreans.
How are y'all doing?
It's nice to be back with you. This is your host, Alan Smith, along with longtime special guest Sam Dingman. As you all listeners to the show are aware, it has always been I, Alan Smith, who has hosted this program with Sam as our regularly reoccurring guest speaker.
Yes, hardly an editorial representative of the program, merely a grateful passerby in these opinionated waters.
I think we can give you staunch contributor status.
I'll take staunch. I've always wanted to be staunch.
Yeah. Do we want to tell people about why we are harping on this particular setup?
Why we are reminding people of the way it has always been?
Yes. Yes.
Well, as longtime listeners to the program know, I have always been a journalist. Professionally, and as a result of that, no, I got like momentarily offended by the fact that we were laughing at that. I don't know what's going on, but in my capacity as a journalist, I now work at a public radio station in an undisclosed location, and as a result of that, of course, could hardly ever publicly identify myself as the host of a ragtag left-leaning baseball podcast. but I can be a guest on one of those.
Sure. We are also, I'm not sure if this is true. I was about to say this is the furthest away from each other as the crow flies that we've ever recorded a podcast. But now I'm not sure if that's accurate.
Ooh, let's see if we can figure this out, because I'm sure this is what people have tuned in to hear.
Yeah. We definitely recorded at least one when I was in Boone, North Carolina.
Yep.
New York to North Carolina is not as far as you are currently from where I sit.
True Baltimoreans heads will recall the, let's go with infamous, moving Toyota Camry episode of, I believe, 2013.
Yep. Yes.
Where I was, again, as a guest of the program, in the back seat of a red Toyota Camry somewhere, I think, in Wyoming, and you were in Brooklyn.
Oh, that might do it.
That
might be the longest as the crow flies, yeah.
So, no dice city that I am currently in.
Coming in second. I'm sure that there is a segue. Coming in second, just like Jordan Westberg in the rookie competition of who can hit the most home runs on the current Baltimore Orioles team.
Coming in second, like the New York Yankees if the season ended today.
Oh, hello. Well, Baltimoreans, we are glad to be back with you here on April 23rd, year of our Lord 2024. We've had a bit of a hiatus as Sam moves to Redacted and takes a new job doing Redacted. But we, you know, now have quite a lot to catch up with you on. I guess we're about 22 games into the season.
Yes, sir.
And I would say the powder puff schedule that we were promised for April to kick off the season has not been as powdery nor as puffy as we were led to believe.
No, I would say if we're going to use powdery as an adjective, I would apply it to the arms of our bullpen pitchers.
Well,
not all
yes,
of them.
Yes, we can get
not
into
not all bullpen pitchers. Hashtag not all Kimbrels.
Yeah, I think it was way back, way at the beginning of the season. But Kimbrel's first attempted save with us was like a bloop single, guy comes around, nothing was hard hit, manages to score to tie the game, and then we won it in the bottom of that inning. And it's, I had like a deep feeling of dread at that moment that we were, the weakness, the strength of yesteryear should become the weakness of today. And then that is sort of what's happened since then, although Craig Kimbrel has not been the chiefest among them.
Scale of 1 to 10, Smith, how much did you buy the, whatever it was, 7 1/3 scoreless innings that Keegan Aiken put up to start the year?
3.
Well, I unfortunately look, I mean, was like, at a 9.
I would say that, this bullpen, when it is anchored by someone like King Felix, who can randomly and suddenly go 2 innings, get 6 outs, just be absolutely dominant, then everything else sort of falls into place a little bit more effectively.
Yeah.
I think Kimbrel's a pretty decent, well, he appears to be a pretty decent closer, although I expect him to fall apart at any minute. But everywhere further down that bullpen, not looking super exciting. So here's a question for you, Sam. On a scale of 1 to Heston Kjerstad, what is the highest level of Orioles prospect you'd be willing to part with for a reliable 8th inning dude?
Ooh. I mean, I guess my feeling is if we're going to deal from our abundance of minor league riches, we should probably think in terms of corner and middle infielders, because we have an astonishing number of those.
Yes.
I think
all of whom apparently are incredibly talented.
Yes. Yes. I would prefer to see if we can still get somebody to invest in the Kyle Stowers experience, which the more the AAA season gets underway, seems to be revealing that as much fun of a dude as Kyle Stowers seems like, he can only really do one thing, and even that only sporadically. That thing is hit dingers. But, you know, your Mayos and your Norbies, you know, I just don't think there's, given the way that Kowser and Westberg and Henderson and, I'm going to say it, Holiday eventually have come into their own.
Holiday's going to be fine. He's just taking the Gunnar Henderson approach.
And the Adley Rutschman approach. And
the Adley Rutschman
approach.
And the
Grayson Rodriguez approach, for that matter. Although we did send Grayson back down, so let's not talk about that. But we'll talk about Holiday in a second. I just think we have so many infielders who, I firmly believe, boss man David Rubenstein is not going to hesitate to sign to long-term deals if he can get them to come to agreement. So I feel like it would be if we're going to make a trade, it would be a wise choice to go the Norby and the Mayo route. However, Smith, here's another question that I have for you.
I think you could get a lot for either of those two people.
You could get a lot for either of those two people, but the question that I think is on the hearts and minds of all who are listening to these very words is, how scared should we be about Bradish and Means? Bradish has been pitching at normal velocity and not seem to be having any physical setbacks on his rehab assignment, but platelet-rich plasma injection, really, for a UCL injury? Is that going to hold? And Means has been getting blowed up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little worried about our boy John Allen.
This is the thing. Assuming that Bradish and Means are going to come back at relative full strength relatively soon, then I'm not as terrified about the bullpen situation, because I think you could put staff ace Albert Suarez in the bullpen, give ourselves another nice strong hard throwing righty. You could put Swervin Irvin in the bullpen. And when Tyler Wells's mysterious elbow injury hopefully heals relatively quickly, you could even put him in there too and maybe send down one of these quackadoos that's not getting the job done. But if that is the case, then I would really like to see us use prospect capital to make another deal for a starting pitcher at the deadline, because the cupboard in the minor leagues is bare in that department.
I mean, you said that, but then we bring up this random Al Suarez fella, and he throws 11 scoreless innings.
Well, look, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
I think, actually, if we just stop for 1 second here, acknowledge that we are nearly 15 minutes into this podcast, where we have not come to any, we have not podcasted since, I believe, the beginning of the actual baseball season. And if you were to just sort of zoom out, you would think, based on how Sam and I are speaking about this team, that we are maybe 6 games under .500 circling the drain. So should we at least spend a moment talking about holy shit, how good this team is?
Okay, fair. That's a good point, Smith. This is a good way.
Anthony Santander is the least exciting batter in our lineup.
Yes, and he too.
What is happening?
He too is gonna be fine. He's gonna be fine.
He's gonna be fine. I even think, and I believe that, or this is now might get me my Orioles Twitter card revoked. I think Austin Hayes is going to be fine.
Wow! Wow! See, I don't know if I can go there with you, but but you're probably right. You're probably right. And this is a great way of getting into the Jackson Holliday question, which is, you know, there are people, Smith. There are people on the internet advocating for the demotion of Jackson Holliday. And look, I get that he's won for his first 32 or whatever it is, with 89,000 strikeouts at last count.
That's about right.
But he's not hurting the team. I think we have maybe lost two games since he was brought up.
He's not hurting the team.
He's not hurting the team, and he has nothing left to prove in the minor leagues. And he clearly has a lot left to prove at the major league level, but there's an insane luxury.
He's got to figure it out, and he's
got to figure it out. And there's an insane luxury to the situation that we are in right now, where we can have a guy who is the actual worst hitter in baseball, other than Jose Abreu, playing second base for us most nights, and it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal, because everyone else on our team is so good.
Yeah, and the investment, as we saw with Gunnar Henderson, as we saw with Adley Rutschman, the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yes.
Like, letting these guys figure out the major league. I mean, maybe this is inaccurate, but it feels to me there's almost no chance that this Holliday kid is a bust, right? Like, the worst case scenario for him is that he never quite, you know, ascends to the level of Gunnar and Adley and doesn't quite live up to the number one billing. But, like, he's going to be a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah, I think his floor is, you know, Gavin Lux, which is a pretty high floor.
I think his floor is Brian Roberts, man. I think he's really going to be good. But anyway,
the boys.
I'm sorry, Brian. I take it
the
back.
The hearts of the boys at Bird's Eye View just skipped beats.
but I don't understand. I mean, yes, I guess he has a couple of times come up in fairly high leverage situations. But like you're saying, we've mostly won those games anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not like Mateo or someone else is going to be providing a lot of other stuff
that are
statistically different than what Jackson Holliday is doing. And we have every reason to believe that with some reps that he has to get at some point, we may as well do them now while we're 15-7 on top of the AL East and looking fairly, you know, competent and confident.
Yes. And look, you know, there you could make the argument that maybe it would be better to have Connor Norby in there, or maybe it would be better to have let's not even go with Kobe Mayo, because Kobe Mayo doesn't play second base. So let's say, you know, you could make the argument that it would be better to have Connor Norby in there. But it's obvious that Jackson Holliday is your second baseman, maybe shortstop of the future, depending on what happens with Gunnar. And it's best for him to go through exactly what he's going through right now so that it doesn't have to happen again. The thing that I think has been really fun about the way that we approached, as you mentioned, Henderson and Rutschman, and let's put Grayson Rodriguez and Colton Cowser on this list too, is that all of those guys struggled at the beginning. In the case of Cowser and Rodriguez, they were sent back down to the minor leagues to work things out. And since they've come back up, I know the season is young, but like it really seems like they have made the adjustments for the long term. And obviously with Gunnar and Adley, it seems like they are now locked in as major league hitters and might get better from where they are right now, which is delightful to think about.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really seem like they're going to go back into the trough.
Sam, do you know what the four people you just mentioned, Henderson, Rutschman, Cowser, Westberg, are currently hitting?
Tell me.
The worst of those four hitters is Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah. At what, 292?
He's 289. OPS 928. He's got 6 home runs, 15 RBIs, and he's stolen 4 bases.
Yes.
Rutschman is not OPSing as hard, but he's hitting a cool 307. He's already batted in 14 RBI.
Yeah.
And then Cowser and Westberg are both north of 320.
Yeah. And one of my favorite things,
Colton Cowser is OPSing 1.2, Sam.
Yes. And just to dig into this a little bit more, because it's fun, Cowser's OPS at Camden Yards, where you would expect him to be a better hitter because he's left-handed, is somewhere in the sixes, which suggests he's going to get better.
Yeah.
Rutschman, who ordinarily walks at an extraordinarily high rate, hasn't been doing that so far this season, but it's not like he forgot how to. So his OPS also going to climb higher.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredibly exciting. And you know, we also should, he's not sort of a young Orioles prospect, but somehow we managed to keep the right aged veteran in Ryan O'Hearn.
Yes.
Like, we were on this podcast trying to figure out, like, what's, like, was that, you know, 2 months ago, was that lightning in a bottle? Was that Ryan O'Hearn's best season ever with a bullet, or is there something actually happening here? And it appears, again, we're only 22 games into the season, but 22 is actually a sample size now. That Ryan O'Hearn is still very good at hitting the ball.
One of the many times that you, as the lead editorial voice on this podcast, have been wrong, Smith. I, of course, never said such things because this is my first time here. no, it's so true. It's so true. We were very wrong about that. And I thought, as you began that sentence, keeping the right veteran named Ryan, that you were going to say Mountcastle, who, Ryan, Mountcastle's season so far is sneakily my favorite one of all the Orioles on the team. Because Mountcastle has realized that when he tries to play the home run game, he is streaky and inconsistent and not effective. I'm inferring all of this based on what I have watched from him so far. Because what Mountcastle's been doing is hitting the ball with authority to left field when he gets a pitch he can do that on, but much more regularly driving it to center, driving it to right center, taking doubles instead of trying to hit home runs, and at last check, leading the team in walks. Something
not
never
not what you would have
used to do before.
Dreamed up. Yeah.
I'm going to check this right now. I believe Ryan Mountcastle has 9 walks so far this season. Let me just take a quick peek. Yeah, 9 walks so far this season, an on-base percentage of 388. He only walked 37 times all of last year.
Wow. Yeah, wow. What a you know, in a I sort of think that 18 months ago or so, the theory was that the only person who was going to be able to hit for any kind of power was going to be Tony Taters or Mountcastle. But now that you've got 5 other young men with pop in the lineup regularly, and, you know, even Cedric Mullins can run into one, as he did recently in the bottom, in a walk-off fashion that I quite enjoyed. You don't need any particular bat to be providing all the power.
Yeah.
And that is a great place, as we often talk about, or as I often talk about, and occasionally you have contributed to.
And thank you for having me, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
When you're not pushing, people can sort of find their level higher than when they're trying to, like, do everything for a team.
Yes. Well, can we talk about the Mullinsants for a second? Because that's my second favorite.
Breaking news, by the way.
Oh, God.
Ryan Mountcastle taking ground balls on the field ahead of batted practice. He's out tonight for the second straight game with swelling in his knee, but the injury doesn't appear serious.
Oh, thank God. Because that's been the other thing that I've been really worried about is, like, you know, he missed so much time with vertigo last year, and he's had so many of these, like, tough luck ailments in recent years. And I have just been really hoping that he gets the chance to really be an entrenched presence in the lineup this year.
Doesn't sound like this is going to be an IL stint.
That is great. Let's talk about the Mullinsants, because that's my other... can you tell I'm trying to make Mullinsants happen?
I like it.
That's been the other thing that has been so fun, I think, to watch this year. As unfun as it has been to watch Hayes really, really struggle, it has been so nice to watch Cedric Mullins settle into what is, you know, probably more like his true talent level than the highs of 2021, where he is, as a number 6, number 7 hitter, who has power from the left side, doesn't strike out too much, and plays, like, highlight reel defense in center field.
Highlight reel defense. He's so good in center field.
What a weapon he has become.
Yeah.
And especially when he gets on base, which he has been doing at a much more regular clip this year, he steals bases and he makes things happen. And you can just tell that the pressure is off of him to be the anchor of the offense now, because mm-hmm. as previously established, mm-hmm. we have 5 other anchors. So Mullins can just be the kind of dynamic, toolsy player, not necessarily all-star, that he always has been, and just, like, relax a little bit. And the benefit of that is just been, like, such a joy. Like, instead of Cedric Mullins being somebody who we have to rely on to play at the top of his talent level all the time, he can just in any given game do one of the several things he's very good at, and that's enough.
Do you think that by the end of this season there's going to be a single Oriole who has, let's say, what's your over under 7 more home runs than the field?
That is a great question. I mean, the thing that is exciting to me about what Kowser and Westberg are doing is that mm-hmm. they both had, Westberg in particular, had enough exposure at the big league level last year for pitchers to find the holes in his swing. So that makes me think that what he's doing right now is the real deal. And my favorite thing is a true reflection of his actual talent level. And in the minor leagues, he had at least one mm-hmm. season where he hit, I think, 35 home runs. The way offense is going this season.
Really?
Yeah.
God, man.
I think it was either 21 or 22. He hit like 35 home runs. The way offense is trending this season across the major leagues, 35 home runs could be near the top of the field. Unless, you know, Otani really gets things going and or something in the National League. So, yeah, I mean, I think a Westberg, a Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar Henderson this year seems to be like taking the next step into finding his power stroke and is on pace for something like 40 home runs right now.
Well, he has the same number as Colton Cowser, who has the same number as Westberg's one behind them right now.
Yeah. What's been exciting to me about watching Westberg is watching him move his hands. He's doing a thing that not enough Orioles hitters currently or really ever have done, which is on inside, he doesn't get beat on inside pitches. He pulls the hands in so fast and just like flicks inside pitches into left field and occasionally drives them over the fence. And that is what Miguel Cabrera used to do in his prime. I'm not saying Jordan Westberg is going to be the next Miguel Cabrera, but it is a hallmark of like really sustained power because there's nowhere in the zone that you can beat him. And look.
And he's hitting so well with two strikes.
And if Cowser can start hitting at Camden Yards the way he hits on the road, he is also on pace for like 40 home runs. So I don't know. The thing that's exciting to me about what we're seeing from those guys, and to say what we've already said previously about Gunnar Henderson, they've already had so much exposure. Like opposing pitchers have had so many chances to.
There's tape on them.
Yeah. Find the weaknesses in their swings and subdue them. So if they're hitting for this much power now, statistically, I think it's more likely that they will continue or get better, question mark, than that this is some kind of early season fluke.
Yeah, and here comes Heston Kjerstad.
Speaking of
looks
power.
Looks like he's going to be in the lineup tonight, who is just hitting the absolute tar out of the ball and has already had more of a cup of coffee than certainly than Halliday.
Yeah. I don't really know what to expect from Kjerstad, honestly. The book on him seems to be that he's definitely going to hit for power but may not do much else. But I don't know. I feel like I didn't get a close enough look at him last year to really have my own feeling about it. And if, you know, I hope he doesn't turn into Joey Gallo, but if he can be a Anthony Santander at his best, and then we have two of those, hey, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, not a terrible person to have in the eight hole.
The only thing that worries me about any of this, Smith, the only thing is that Halliday hits left-handed, Cowser hits left-handed, Gunnar hits left-handed, Kjerstad hits left-handed. So if those guys, and Mullins hits left-handed. So if these are going to be the guys that are really anchoring the lineup and providing a lot of power, it does leave us very exposed to, teams that have left-handed pitchers, which is most of them.
Yeah. But I mean, I haven't seen I guess we've been protecting them a little bit, but, I don't get the sense that the splits are all that egregious.
Yeah, and O'Hearn, we should say, also is left-handed. But this, for me, just goes back to the sneaky importance of Mountcastle to this lineup firing on all cylinders. Because if you can keep Mountcastle in the... What's been exciting to me about Mountcastle this year is that he's hit righties and lefties with authority. And if he can stay in the lineup, it takes the pressure off of those other guys to have to be as good against lefties as they are against righties.
So who of our current bench mob do you feel like is most likely to not be here going forward? Tony Kemp barely got a, you know, we hardly knew
who?
Ye. Exactly. but who else do you suspect won't be here for much longer?
I think it's
And why is it your Ramon Urias?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's really tough to see. I mean, I thought it was very cool that Urias played first base capably last night when Mountcastle had to be out of the lineup. I really like Ramon Urias. He is an excellent defender and has a tendency to get big hits.
He was on a 7-game hitting streak coming into last night.
Yeah, there's nothing to dislike about him. I just think once Holiday gets going, it's very hard to make an argument that he does any one thing better than any of the other guys. And if Mateo can play second base capably and also play left field and center field and shortstop if we need that, which hopefully we never will, you add in the speed element of Mateo and the fact that in limited plate appearances, he can ambush big hits every once in a while. It doesn't leave much of a role for Urias.
Yeah, I mean, I think
and
that
that's to say nothing of the fact that Norby and Mayo are banging on the door right behind him.
Yeah, yeah, I think that that's probably right, and that like I'm wondering whether the problem is that no one's made a good offer yet. I mean, like, is it just that Elias values him highly enough that he wants to kind of get a good return, or what the holdup has been there?
I think it's that, and it may also be the fact that, as we were talking about at the very beginning, it seems likely that we're going to make some kind of move at the deadline, either for a starting pitcher or for a high leverage middle reliever. And if it's Mayo and Norby that you need to include in a package to get that done, it doesn't hurt to have Urias still floating around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that we're going to get one of Bradish and Means back to a high functioning version of themselves. I think we can count on one of those two guys being a knocked on third starter, but it does, especially given what he eventually signed for, it does make you wonder why we weren't in on the Jordan Montgomery. I won't even call them a sweepstakes because it was nothing.
Yeah,
it was a tiny contract.
That doesn't make any sense. And it also doesn't make any sense given the riches that we had to offer that we didn't find a way to get a deal for Dylan Cease done.
Yeah.
Especially given the way that Cease is pitching so far. My God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, we seem to be really on to something here with this Burns character.
Yeah, I would say
I think he's good.
Are solid.
It seems like Grayson is doing more progress than he is sophomore slumping. I will not be sad if Cole Irving doesn't start a lot more games for us. I will not be sad if Dean Kramer ends up in the fifth starter role. But I do still feel like we have a need there, and I hope that it is filled by a pretty decent Kyle Bradish doing a pretty decent impression of 2023 Kyle Bradish, because he was a good pitcher.
He was a good pitcher. And I mean, I think the thing that we can feel good about is that given the fact that we have Burns now, and given the fact that Grayson seems to have taken the next step, we don't need Kyle Bradish to be a Cy Young contender. Kyle, if you're listening, mm-hmm. I'm not saying don't do that, but we just need him to be capable. Tillman-esque, one might say. Sort of a 2014 Bud Norris type performance would get the job done.
Yeah.
And same with Means. I mean, I think at this point with Means expecting anything at all, really, is a fool's errand. But
I'm worried about that, boy.
We don't need these guys to be world beaters. And this is fun to think about. That's because we now have two world beaters in our rotation. Like, by the, you know, The Athletic is doing, Eno Saris is doing this thing this year where he ranks the top pitchers in the league every week. And we have two of the top 10, which is insane.
It is. I mean, it's such a position of strength, and I feel like I, there've been a couple of games so far where that Cole Irving has been pitching that I shouldn't just pick on him. I also felt this way when Tyler Wells was pitching, but you know, where I watch the game feeling like, well, this is maybe not us putting our best foot forward. This is maybe not us trying, you know, to win this particular game. But then when I step back and realize that, like, you know, you need, you can't have all five starters be paid and salaried and resourced like aces. So you have to find ways of getting other quality out of other places. And man, I don't know, like, is this Suarez thing for real? This is pretty exciting.
It is exciting. I will go on the record and say that I think we have gotten all... I think we should consider ourselves wildly fortunate that we've gotten these 11 scoreless innings out of Mr. Suarez, and that if we can find a way to get him into the bullpen PDQ after this, that will represent the best possible Suarez outcome. Because I do worry that the regression is coming, especially if, you know, when he has to go against a really hard hitting team. But
what if? Bear with me here. What if Mike Elias has a preternatural ability to pick one random let's say non-English speaking journeyman pitcher per year and have them just wildly exceed expectations?
I mean, that is an amazing and very valuable superpower. But it better be Suarez, because I don't think it's Johan Ramirez.
It's not Johan Ramirez. But you know, you got to take a couple bites at that apple.
You will. A couple bites at the apple, or, three wild pitches, which he threw
that was a little,
in one inning.
Fuji-esque.
Yeah. Yeah. Except he doesn't have the upside of Fuji.
No. No.
I'm ready.
Yeah, I don't know.
I will also go on the record saying I'm ready to be done with the Johan Ramirez experiment.
Sure, fine. But you know, but that's a crazy part about, maybe this is a thing of Allen wasn't paying as close attention when the Orioles were bad as when the Orioles are good now. But I don't remember, like, the Orioles taking quite so many flyers in past years as they have in the last two, where, like, we'll bring somebody in, we'll, like, give them a contract, then we never really had, like, then they just don't make the team, or they're not, like, they can't get it back. Like, the Tony Kemp being kind of like one of the classic example of this. Like, we paid him $1 million for, I think, 22 at bats.
Well, you're right, Smith, but I think the reason for that is because in previous years those guys weren't flyers, they were regulars.
That was our team.
Like, you know, in 2021, Tony Kemp probably gets 450 at bats. And Suarez gets 23 starts, no matter how ugly 20 of them are.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Like, when Royals came to town, seeing our old friend Adam Frazier, and realizing that, like, he does not have a role on this team.
Yeah.
We couldn't, we just can't fit you in, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Ramon Urias has a job is crazy, let alone that we would have tried to keep Frazier. And speaks to the level of belief that Elias must have in O'Hearn. Because you could also argue that if Kerstad comes on really strong and we need to find at-bats for him, O'Hearn could be on the bubble.
That's true. That's true. I think that every good team can find a place for a pinch hitter with O'Hearn. Like, I feel like my ideal bench at any given time is one of O'Hearn and Mountcastle, and then Mateo for speed.
Yes.
Like, I like having that weapon.
Yes, and we have seen O'Hearn in the outfield before, and he's been capable out there.
Let's see. It's not capable. Is that the word you use? I would say he's been cromulent at best.
I'm second guessing capable. Capable is not not what I want to go with.
But you know, the other day, Mateo, in a 2-0 game, so it wasn't like this is maybe recency bias on my part, but he got on base with a walk and then stole two bases and then, frankly, rattled the pitcher enough that by the time he like got his head around, Mateo was walking home on like a little Adley blooper that if Mateo hadn't been on third, would have been caught because it was infield pulled in and Adley could just stroke it over the shortstop.
In the words of that guy who played for the Royals in 2014, whose name I forget, that's what speed do.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Mateo has found his level and that I'm very happy to have him on the team. I'd rather he didn't play as much in center field, but I guess Cedric needs a rest every so often.
Yeah. But this is an example, I think, of to go back to the Bradish and Means, or maybe Cedric Mullins is a better example. Like, we have finally built the kind of team that allows Jorge Mateo to be the best version of himself, rather than needing to play way above his ceiling in order for us to be competitive.
Right. Right. Again, people finding their ideal level. It's so exciting, Dingman. It's so exciting.
It is very exciting. It is very exciting. Much like it is exciting for me to be a guest on this podcast, which I have admired for many years. Great work, Smith, by the way. Great work. That other guy you had with you before, I think it's good he is gone. I think that's wise.
Yeah.
Somebody told me he moved out west.
Yeah, well, never we will hear from him again.
Better than a farm upstate.
Better than a farm upstate. I'm just making sure we've covered all of the important points as we welcome ourselves back from the 20-odd game hiatus that we were on to begin the season. But one of the things that is pressing on Sam and my's to-do list, Baltimoreans, is to get you the official 2024 roster of names that it is acceptable to yell at your TV screen, e.g. our annual nickname episode. But one of the problems of being 22 games into the season is we have to acknowledge that certain players have already ended up getting nicknames from the crowd that are quite decent.
Yes.
I think we can give Ben McDonald credit for the milkman.
Yes, as well as the catchphrase that he always delivers.
I love it. It's just in that, to me, like classic baseball nickname range where it's like kind of silly. Like, it's not like the Grim Reaper. It's not like particularly badass.
Right.
It's just... Right. It's the ideal nickname. Hats off to you, Mr. McDonald.
Yes, and I don't even hate Turn and Burn O'Hearn, even though it's kind of word salad.
That one leaves me a little bit less exciting. I think we can top that one, but the milkman, and then having everybody in the stadium figure out collectively that they could moo at him whenever he does something great. It's just great.
And wear
it's cow fantastic.
Suits in some cases. I love it.
But one of the things that I find interesting, again, about this team as compared to, oh, I don't know, every other team that we've watched since we've been doing this podcast effectively, is
you've
that
been doing
I feel
this
like
podcast.
The nickname...
You've been doing
that,
this podcast.
Sorry. That since this podcast has been recorded, is that we have this like very real potential here for... you know, 5 to 7 of our starting lineup to be people who we have to deal with for like 10 to 12 years. And if we give them a bad nickname and we somehow allow that bad nickname to stick, we're in a real pickle here.
Yeah.
It's not like giving some fly by night random I'm actually frankly a little bit surprised that Sex Turret is still around and kicking as a nickname. I think that's fantastic.
Drifting about the fringes of the internet.
Yeah.
Well, you know what they say about great power, Smith?
Yeah. Lots of wins.
Exactly.
A X FIP that's higher than anybody else's. Isn't that what they say about great power? I don't know what X FIP is.
It's
very late. I'm very tired, Baltimoreans.
But we also know that you're gonna watch the game in 3 minutes because
oh god,
this is an illness as much as it is a fandom. Well, I just have one other question for you, Smith, and I don't know if this is the type of question that has ever been asked on the show before, because again, it is my first time here, but
sure.
I'm wondering, I have an affinity, and this is kind of strange, but I have an affinity for this former Orioles prospect named Henry Urrutia. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, yeah, it rings a bell.
And I wonder, I just thought of this question related to him in the context of the conversation we've been having today, which is, what would you call, Smith, Henry Urrutia, if he was being referred to, or summoned, perhaps I should say, with the same affectionate chant as Colton Cowser, the milkman?
Would that be Henry Urrutia?
It would. Clearly you have been asked this question before.
I think I have asked or been asked that question every 6 to 8 hours for the last 3 days.
Well, Baltimoreans.
But I think that's the marcus of a life well lived.
It is. Amen.
Baltimoreans, get us your nicknames. Now here's my challenge to you. I, like you, have been on Orioles Twitter. I know Milkman. We're good there. Come on. I want nicknames for the as yet unnicknamable. And I will include in that list Al Suarez. I will include in that list, I think Austin Hayes is still looking for a good nickname. Mm-hmm. I think that we can do better than Ryan O'Hitter. I think we can achieve greater heights. So give me we don't need anything else for Adley. We're good on him.
No, the flying what else you the got? Flying Rutschman is entrenched. But
yeah, Gunderpants, I'm afraid, is also
for better
for keeps,
or for
as
worse
far as I'm concerned.
Can I also say no mean Jackson Holiday ones. We're better than that. We're better than that.
Has that even been started to happen? Come on, guys.
We don't know who's listening to this.
20.
There could be some of the people who lurk in Jeff Passan's Twitter replies listening to this.
Well, we should take receipts because in the middle of this season, as he is closing the gap with Colton Cowser for Rookie of the Year, you'll all be sorry.
The reckoning will be fierce. All right, Baltimoreans, we'll talk to you again soon. I mean, Alan will. I'll be here if he invites me.
Baltimoreans.